Room Temp Vodka, written by Silent Walrus, read by Opal Song. Fandom Full Metal Alchemist, rating mature. Relationship Ed Roy. Also tagged for a couple of war criminals drinking margaritas and having girl talk. Part 15 of Caveat Emptor.
I do the same thing I told you that I never would. I told you I changed, even when I knew I never could. Know that I can't find nobody else as good as you. I need you to stay, need you to stay. I get drunk, wake up, I'm wasted still. I realize the time that I wasted. I feel like you can't feel the way I feel. I'll be fucked up if you can't be right. Can't be right. Yeah. I do the same thing I told you that I never would. I told you I changed, even when I knew I never could. Know that I can't find nobody else as good as you. I need you to stay. Need you to stay. I do the same thing I told you that I never would. I told you I changed.
Chapter 1. The day after he picks Ed up from the hospital, he's busy arranging the matter of Colonel Arlon. The Marluck family owned his debt and only agreed to sell it to Chris if she opened up passage through the southern border. So now she's begun the process of taking them over entirely after giving Roy the kind of sigh she used to give when the cat brought dead pigeons to the back doorstep. But Roy has not forgotten that the matter with Ed needs management soon. And now that he's thinking clearly, he needs to call Diane and tell her that maybe some of her people need to host a few sessions on what not to do when handing out domestic abuse outreach. If Roy was beating Ed and found him with that flyer, it wouldn't exactly do Ed any favors. Then he rolls over in bed the next morning and finds that the golden glint coming blearily into focus is a long blonde hair left across his pillow. He growls incoherently under the shrill of his alarm clock. Riza and Mace are seeing him tonight, no matter what anyone's damn schedule says. He makes Morizé call Gracia for him and rearrange his appointment so that he takes his monthly range time at the end of the day, coinciding with Riza's much more frequent practice. She takes one look at him, ripping his jacket off and jamming the earmuffs on, and trades his standard issue M6D for her Ansel 45. The recoil on it makes his wrists ache and his palms go numb, which makes him focus that much more just to keep the weapon steady and maintain his aim. Gracia's making dinner, he tells her once they're winching back their targets. I'll get us the car, Riza replies, zipping the Ansel back into her kit. Gracia welcomes them, Mace pouring sangria as Alicia, only somewhat clumsily, finishes tossing the salad. They've got mosquito torches, so they take the plates out to the back patio, surrounded by the Byzantine hedges and mufflingly vast shrubs Gracia has planted extensively around the back garden. Where's Ed? Alicia says as she clatters into her seat, looking around curiously as if he might be crouching in the bushes. Out of town, Roy tells her, because he's fairly sure that's even true. Okay, Alicia accepts. She proceeds to carry most of the meal's conversation, in defiance of the understanding that the average preteen is supposed to be moody, miserly, and misunderstood. She's very busy staging a complex takeover of her school student council, and in between corn cobs explains to Roy exactly how it is one seizes power. Roy sits through it like he sat through any number of other briefings this week. After, she hugs him before she skips upstairs, a child's clumsy half-collision that's mostly elbow around his neck. Gracia takes one look at Roy, shares a glance with Mace, and then decides to take the plates inside, the faint sounds of washing up starting to echo through the open kitchen window as Risa returns from the bathroom. So, Mace says, relaxing back into his chair, as Risa places a row of nail polishes on the table in front of her, the hallucinogenic colors all immediately sourcing them as Alicia's. Is this about whatever it is that had you ordering a complete audit of all our intelligence channels last week? Yes, no. Edward wants to fuck me, Roy says. Oh, Risa says. Huh, Mace says. Roy digs his fingers into his forearm so as not to claw at his hair like a crazy person. This is not news in these quarters. I suppose he really was a bit doth protest too much about you, now I think about it, Mace concedes. So, I just found out. He's felt this way for years. Roy cuts the urge to wave his arms. We've been doing this since April, and I had no idea until he told me last week. You're very worked up about this, Mace observes. What happened? He stick his hand down your pants and tell you he'd let you call him baby? What? No, he thought I knew already. Mace and Risa keep looking at him, though Risa is somewhat sideways given how she's busy taking off her boots. So, what else have I been missing? Mace looks at Risa, then back at him. What? You mean like our country is a sham, our leader was a puppet homunculus, we're all blood sacrifices, that sort of thing? Yes, that sort of thing, Roy hisses. I think you can say you missed a teenage crush because we were all blood sacrifices, our leader was a homunculus, and our country's a sham, Risa says consideringly, propping her bare foot up on her chair and holding up a bottle of nail polish to the light. Those were somewhat higher priority on the list. How do you pronounce chartreuse? Chartreuse, Mace says helpfully. It's Edward, Roy stresses, staring them each in the face in turn. Elric. He can barely talk below shouting volume, and you expect me to believe he wasn't obvious about it? Not to mention the rest. Mace, you saw it all before you even knew what a homunculus was. Okay, Mace says. Is this about national security, or is it about Ed's crush? Because it's not both. Are you aware it's not both? It's not that I personally object to the audit, you understand. It's not like we have anything else to do. We're all really very excited. It's just that when every single one of my staff officers asks me for the 60th time, why the fuck are we doing this? I want to have a better answer than because our esteemed minister is freaking out over the behavior of teenagers. It's only when Roy feels the high-pitched whine in the back of his skull begin to recede that he realizes it's been going on for a while. A note of something like horror sustained for days. It's possible he's been reacting a bit strongly to this. He's missed what he is to Ed, and he can't afford to miss what he is to the people around him. That's how Bradley and the officer conspiracy got them. But Mace is right. Ed having a crush isn't exactly a threat, and he already knew Ed liked him well enough, just not like this. What exactly happened? Mace says. Roy tells them. Mace listens with his mental scriptographer face on. Risa unscrews all four bottles of polish at once and starts painting her toenails different colors. I tried to explain, Roy concludes, more haltingly than he'd like. That it wouldn't be. That it's not a good idea. And he didn't seem to expect anything, but he wasn't pleased by our conversation. When was this? Risa says. The night we were supposed to have the variety interview. Tuesday. But that was before the hospital. The hospital? Mace repeats. I Yesterday I picked him up from the hospital. He got hit by a bicyclist, broke some fingers, got some morphine, they called me. I drove him home. Roy scrubs his hands over his face again, scar tissue bumping his nose. Then decides he probably shouldn't omit the worst part of that encounter. He was crying. Ah, Reza says. Mace sighs deeply. Did you yell at him? I bought him a milkshake. That's not a no, Reza observes. It worked, Roy says defensively. What was I supposed to do? Pat him on the head and say, there, there, I'm here to make it all better? I'm not going to feed him bullshit. What he needed was to get home, get some calories, and sleep the morphine off. That's what I gave him. He has to say the real thing, though. Otherwise, why did he even come here at all? I asked him. He said he was crying about not being able to have solid food, but... Roy rubs his face again. He thinks it's more than just physical. They both just keep looking at him. Mace starting to go amused. Reza looking a bit nonplussed. Well, yes, that's generally what a crush involves, Mace says, clearly saying what Reza's thinking. Erections rarely last years, Roy. Roy just stares back at them. Unamused. You know what I mean. Well, Mace sighs. It's a bit late for a graceful letdown, sounds like, but Ed's pretty forgiving. If you act right, if you start with an apology, he might not slam the door in your face. And he'll probably even listen if you explain why things wouldn't work between you. An apology may be necessary. At that, Ed hadn't meant to insult him, and Roy had spoken before he'd thought. Ed tells him he has feelings for him, and Roy did, admittedly, react like he just saw Hayate eat something disgusting off the sidewalk. No, stop! Put it down! And it's true that in the moment he had meant it, but Ed's internal world has always seemed so reliably self-stabilizing, his system a self-correcting one. He's always been so self-assured that Roy hadn't even considered it possible he could hurt Ed. Not like this. Hadn't fully believed he had. Mace has a growing little line between his brows, however, developing into a thoughtful sort of frown as he watches Roy. Why wouldn't it work, though? He says. You like Ed. You liked him even when he was an 8-pound bag of rabies and rail bolts. You thought he was the cutest little alligator in that hick swamp and took him straight home. There's an imbalance. I can't just... No, listen to me, Roy insists when Mace snorts and Reza gives him a look that Roy imagines is most often experienced by diseased mollusks in some biologist's specimen tank somewhere. If he's got a crush lasting years and I've only just realized he's grown good-looking, you don't need me to tell you what it's like in relationships where one side is more invested than the other. Mace just stares back at him, impressed. You think you're not invested? It's not the same, Roy argues. You know it's not the same. So what? You're waiting to fall madly in love before you even try dating someone? Mace snorts. Has stepping out with him been that bad? It hasn't. It hasn't been bad at all. He's never bored with Ed in the room. Frustrated, certainly. Indignant, baffled, but never bored. He'd enjoyed their dinners, appreciated their conversation, found himself startled to laughter far more than once. He does like Ed. And always did. This vicious, cute thing, flailing and yelping like Hayate, even as he demanded respect and forced leverage and backed up every one of his childishly overblown threats, his impossible promises. And Roy knows what people saw on his arm now. Overstacked muscles and total pliancy of character. A round, sweet face meant for coddling. He'd marveled at it himself. how a simple costume change made such a transformation, how different Ed could look in light, easy clothes and a light, easy smile. "Why are you fighting this so hard anyway?" Mace says. "He's already friends with all your friends. You can communicate like adults when you put your mind to it. Your family will just be grateful you aren't paying one of them to pretend to be your wife. Or worse, asking them to do it for free," Risa murmurs. Roy glares. Mace shrugs again. "You're already dating him as a scandal bait smokescreen. Maybe treat it real for a minute and see how it goes." Roy exhales sharply. "Ed has feelings. I'm not going to use that on the chance that it might turn into something more for me."
"You've never worried about it before," Risa says.
When they were young officers, Risa used to ask questions when Roy was being a moron. "Are you sure? Is this everything? What about this?" Now she just caps the nail polish bottle and sets it down and looks at him. A locomotive rail look. "You've always trusted Ed to handle himself before. Why is this any different?" When Roy doesn't answer, too long, Mace says, "Look, either your hang-ups are well-founded, in which case you shouldn't go after him, or they're bullshit, in which case you should stop worrying about them. You're 38, Roy. It doesn't have to be Ed, but Alicia is going to start needing opportunities to earn a babysitting paycheck in the next few years. And if you're not going to be her first client, I need to start building inroads elsewhere." Roy glares at him. "We got our vasectomies at the same time, Mace." "So, I always assumed you'd be adopting anyway," Mace says unconcernedly. "Or going to stepfather to some rich older widow with a brat pack that doesn't require you to be home more than 2 nights a week. Becoming an in-law to a 20-foot snake isn't what I'd envisioned, I'll admit, but since you seem to be rather into that..." "Has Alicia considered the pet-sitting route instead?" Risa asks, getting back to her toes. "There's quite the market for a good dog walker, especially one who'll exercise high-energy dogs. You said she's thinking of joining the cross-country team?" Roy thunks his spoon down. "Can we fucking take this seriously?"
"Yes, let's,"
Mace says, honing back in on Roy with that abrupt focus he likes to disconcert people with. "Here, I'll start. You were never going to keep Ed in any other way than the personal, first off, so you're lucky as hell that he's interested at all. Second, he'd be an actual partner, not just some placeholder or strategy chip. And the kid's got charisma like a tank. People like him. If he comes back to being Full Metal, people will be lining up around the goddamn block. And if you're not going to marry Alex, and neither Catherine nor Olivier will have you, then frankly, Ed Elric is about as good as you can do, without sourcing from out of the country. Though, honestly, what? My candidates weren't unhinged enough? Insufficiently feral? Even Olivier?" The morning that Mace slapped down an actual dossier of romantic candidates, like some kind of deranged matchmaker with access to an entire intel department, wasn't the earliest Roy's ever started drinking, but it was close. "I mean, they're all blonde, stacked, and insane," Mace continues. "What else are you looking for? You finally get someone who meets all your criteria and you're dithering? Roy, let's not kid ourselves here. Who else will have you?"
"I'm not looking for someone to have me," Roy says flatly, because that's the whole point, isn't it?
"But you really should be," Mace says, infuriatingly reasonable. "You're the only unmarried general in the entire council. Now, they're all old enough to father you, and think you're a whore besides, so you've got a little wiggle room, but that's closing fast. How many times has Marta cornered you in the past month?"
Roy fights the urge to fling his teaspoon into the fence hard enough to make it stick. Of course there are people willing to court him. Those who don't care he's a mass murderer or a cheating psychopath, don't have a full picture of the political landscape he operates in, think he can afford to marry down, and are convinced they'll be able to leverage him for their own business. At least it's well within his persona to entertain without commitment, because it's not as though he can decline the invitations to every card game, garden party, and drinks night shunted his way for the express purpose of hunting his matrimonial potential down like a maimed rabbit. Ed's presence hasn't even made a dent in those efforts. So you'd better start your balls rolling, or you'll be fending off every Marta Sangrelina and Bobby Reinhardt until one of them catches you off guard and backs you into a corner because you weren't paying attention, Mace concludes. As for Ed, date him or no, you still need him in our block, and he's loyal, but he's young, and he's only going to grow. I keep telling you, you can't just rely on talented people falling onto your dick and being too decent to ditch you after. If you don't protect your investment, someone else is going to come sniffing around and turn his head. Roy scowls. He wasn't turned by Ling Yao. So far, Mace counters. And Yao's sending Ed packages every month, and letters, and gifts to his automail girl and his brother. He elevated Mei Chang to the ambassador's entourage, purely for Alphonse. Yao is grateful for Ed's help. He likes Ed, and he's made sure Ed knows it. What have you given him? A black eye? It's a goddamn miracle the kid has a crush on you. Roy is beginning to get a lot of insight into how Pate geese feel, fed up and up and up until he feels it rising in his throat. He shouldn't. You said it yourself. Nobody worth having would want me. Mace's eyes narrow. Then he quite deliberately looks at Riza. Before they were officers at all, and Roy was already being a moron, Riza never pinched him like Diane does, or whapped him upside the head like Katerin and Vanessa. She didn't even get angry, really. She'd just get this blank, stolid face on. The look that made all the farm boys who thought they were townies think she was slow. Because she was trying very hard to understand what went wrong with you to make you do that. More recently, the look now also says, you can do that again if you like.
I'm sorry, Roy says. That's not what I meant.
What did you mean? Mace says in that precise, direct way he talks when he's angry. And it occurs to Roy that this applies to him too. Because it sounds like you said the people who back you, the ones trusting you to lead them and protect them and serve them, have nothing but your contempt. And I know that's not what you meant. The personal is never apolitical, but the political is not necessarily personal.
There's a difference, Roy says slowly, carefully, between backing a candidate with good odds of winning in a landscape with few other options, and deciding, in your love life, that a man's history doesn't matter.
Well, shit, then. I guess whenever you come over now, we'll have to ask Gracia to cook nothing but cockroach gruel and serve you in a dog bowl while Alicia kicks rocks at your naked ass and we flog each other for being sinners, Mace says, a little too sharply, to make his usual mean brightness seem entirely controlled. We'll have to take turns, since my wife and child will have to get flogged too, for association. That'll really move Amstress into a new era. Hell, it might even bring all those dead Ishvalans back. But even if it doesn't, so long as we feel bad, that's what matters, right? Just so long as we feel really, really bad. Roy opens his mouth to tell him to quit making a farce of this, but Mace cuts him off, laying his hands flat on the table. Roy, either there is a way forward or there isn't. Either you're alive or you're not. And since you are alive, he says pointedly, wearing 60,000 cents shirts and taking a vine goddamn aeon to dinners at the Circle, I think it's a little hypocritical to call it a moral problem when your friends like you. Roy opens his mouth to say that Mace knows full well that every one of Roy's dates and shirts and meals is for a purpose, but he had slept with Avine, not just pretended to. Because he knew she didn't know him and it wouldn't last. Because he could tell himself it was different. Because you can tell yourself that just one chocolate can't hurt. That if you just kill this one fucking homunculus, you can get back to the plan. That this one won't count. That it doesn't matter. Because he hadn't been thinking about any of that at all in the moment. Not with her, not with Risa, not with that one bartender back in East all those years ago. He'd slept with Aveen because she was friendly and funny and she wanted to. You can't have it both ways, Roy, Mace says. And it's less sharp now, more tired. Either we're bad people and nothing good can come from us, or there is something of worth here. And if there is, then you don't get to tell off other people for finding it worthy, too. It's true. He wouldn't be alive if he didn't believe, in the bedrock of himself, that this is true. But Roy is a war hero. He had a parade to helm every victory day and 4 annual ceremonies before he ever made minister. He is the face and the name and the fist of Amstrian victory. And Ishval might have promoted Mace and made Riza's name as a sniper, but neither of them were elevated by it like Roy was, and no other soldier was either. He's on the recruitment posters and in the radio serials, has invitations to speak at military academies and civilian universities, has some godforsaken dead-eyed statue of him stuck in the middle of some square back in East. Some days it's like being held face down in laudanum, as if he's the one sick, unwell, like they're just trying to help him, like they're just trying to make him drink. But most days it's even worse, because there's none of that at all. Just the bodega cashier yelling at him for holding the cold case open too long, and some taxi driver swerving and nearly taking him out in the street, and the university children not recognizing him in his own home. I can forget you. The world whispers with every mundanity. I can erase what you've done. It'll be as if nothing happened at all. It would be easy. It would be as easy as joining the military had been, as effortless as the conviction that he was doing the right thing. So he can't lose sight. He's learned to make every medal a reminder, to make sure his certainty is pointed in the right direction. Because when he points himself at something, little survives. It's something he's banking on as a reformer, as a factor in his love life, less so. But if the argument is that he doesn't want to hurt Ed, well, that's turned out well, hasn't it? If there's no soundness to his arguments, then what happened is he made a mistake. He was caught off guard, he jumped to conclusions, he reacted badly, he didn't think. He's only just now started thinking. We're not with you because we think nobody else can like us, you know, Risa says. She's not looking at him anymore, having gone back to her toenails. Or because we think you need watching, or because we think you're going to be president. She switches legs and unscrews another bottle of polish. This one, a garish pink. And I don't think Ed is either. Mace snorts, loosening further in his chair. Yes, why do you think he said yes to your datorama? The kid could be doing a million more interesting things with his summer. And should be, too. The more he gets involved, the more people are going to take an interest. Especially if he keeps doing shit like punching cops and saving ambassadors' children. He needs to shit on the Full Metal thing or get off the pot. And either way, you probably need to get more involved than you have been. He picks up his sangria, taking a reflective sip. He's a lot like you, Roy. Not many people left who can tell him no. He's gotten better, Roy finds himself saying, knowing he's taking the coward's way out to talk about this rather than the rest of it. Mace gives him a look of amazed pity. He put a snake in your house, Roy. Yes, you're supposed to be the only snake in that house, Risa murmurs. The ambassador's child was a reasoned response to an immediate crisis, Roy says, ignoring her. And he listened when I told him to deal with the police a different way. So you have no reason not to take Ed seriously as a partner, Mace concludes. because he will quite probably rise from the dead if given an opportunity to harass Roy about his lack of matrimonial bliss. Unless you really can't stand the thought of fucking him, in which case just go apologize and take your hits like a man.
If I suddenly start being sweet on him, he's going to think I've been body snatched, Roy says flatly. And he never actually propositioned me. He only just brought it up, and he did not seem happy about it.
Mace rolls his eyes. Of fucking course he wasn't. You've got the words shit prospect spelled out over your head in fire, sometimes literally. But the kid's never given a damn whether his odds were bad, and he already took a chance on you, back when the stakes were his brother.
What does Ed do? Risa says, when he wants something and sees the slightest chance he can get it.
Breaks reality, Roy didn't need to say. Challenges God, reaches into the land of the dead. No wonder he treats Roy's career like a cute hobby, as though running a country is like canning your own jam on the weekends. Compared to Ed's own track record, it's a little unambitious. How could he ever have thought this isn't serious? It's Ed. It's just difficult to reconcile. That if given the opportunity, what he'd go after is Roy.
Yeah, he should really raise his standards, Mace says meditatively. But while he hasn't, you definitely still have a chance.
Roy turns to more fully see both of them, so that they can all confront this statement with the attention it deserves.
You seriously think I should court Edward Elric?
Risa shrugs. If you think you can handle it.
If I can handle it?
You couldn't even handle him crying, Mace says, in a pointing out the obvious tone. He's been with people who love him, not to mention the Emperor of Jing. I can't imagine him being impressed by anything you have to put on offer.
And yet, it's him you want me to chase after,
Roy says, stung despite the fact of, well, the entire preceding 20 minutes.
Yes, it's going to be hilarious, Mace says frankly.
You've never had to grovel for anyone before in your life. I can't goddamn wait. A pair of hands settle on Roy's shoulders, landing almost before the aura of doom they bring with them. So, Gracia says, he hadn't even heard her come back outside. When are we meeting him, Roy?
You've met Ed dozens of times, Roy says,
knowing how flimsy a deflection it is even as he says it.
Diane's met him.
But he hasn't met us, Gracia agrees sweetly. Together.
Ed and I aren't together,
Roy stresses.
Yet, Mace says cheerfully.
Though who knows, maybe he'll tell you to shove your apology, and I won't have to use giant magnets and whiskey to erase the knowledge that I met Ed when he was the same age Alicia is now.
Roy groans into his hands. I'm sorry, all right? I really am.
Oh, I know, Mace says cheerfully. It's a good look on you. Keep it up.
Gracia tuts.
Scandalous is a Mustang family tradition. Now, we know Ed is a nice young man, but we'd better make sure he can measure up. Have you talked to Chris?
Oh, gods. There is no way he's going to be able to escape talking to Chris. Well, he wanted to talk to Di anyway. I'm seeing her this week.
Good, Gracia says, smiling as she leans down to give him a kiss on the cheek. A good, solid one, wearing that awful, sticky lemon lip balm that's hell to rub off, because she'd obviously listened to every word of their discussion and has chosen Mace over Mustang ever since they met. She should know when she's about to be threatened with grandchildren, especially if they're going to be snakes.
The snake is very cute, Risa comments, because she, like Ed, harbors the same mutations that let her smile at demons and pet things that best belong left under large rocks. It's yellow.
I'll look forward to pictures,
Gracia says, going over to put her hands on Risa's shoulders too, giving her a much more loving hug. Now get out of my house. It's Alicia's bedtime. They call for a car home, waiting out on the porch for it to arrive. The neighborhood is quiet, pools of lamplight dotting the night, reflecting off flower beds and scattered toys and chunky mailboxes. Risa stares out at the gardens, still barefoot with her boots in hand, her uniform jacket folded over her elbow, her rolled shirt cuff almost touching his arm. She used to flinch when he got too near, after he burned her tattoo. It had taken a few months for the reflex to die, even with the two of them together every day, passing papers, coffee, messages. It was never anything dramatic, never disruptive, but Roy noticed. Every time. She did too. Her toenails are green and orange and pink and yellow.
I hope you own nail polish remover, Roy says.
No, Risa says, glancing down and wiggling her toes. I'll wait for it to come off.
Will you?
Risa gives him a look.
Mascara incident, Roy counters.
I was 13.
Which is still too old to decide Benazine is an acceptable substitute for makeup remover, Roy maintains. If you understand what a solvent is, it's not ignorance that makes you put it on your face. That was you knowing the risks and doing it anyway.
Risa grins briefly, a little slash in the dark. Then she looks back out at the street, and her posture resettles a little, a shift in her breath like when she aims. Roy, you told me to live. Roy doesn't look at her. It stays like this. He can feel the seam between them. A fault line that breathes with the heat of a killing fever. A scar that cannot close. They can't build over it. They can't suture. It can't seal. It's the last line of defense. It's their promise to keep demanding more from each other until there's nothing left. Risa Hawkeye loves Roy Mustang to death. So I'm telling you too. She's just a shadow in his peripheral vision now, a bare outline of the summer streetlight glow. We need things. We need people, other people. We don't have enough. Being alone gets... It can be dangerous. Roy knows. He'd felt it. A desperation, a dependence like heroin. That thing they'd felt when he'd moved in her blind in the middle of that crater, sobbing, inhaling each other's blood. I'll do terrible things without you. The threat of a promise they can't keep, a weight their balance books already can't afford. He knows Risa feels it too, on a purely practical level. They've made the only good choice. She's already his partner, his safety, his right hand. He's made her the gun to his skull. He's not going to saddle her with being his wife as well. If he struck Ed, well, he's disfigured her. Perverse luck that he has. It's only cleaved them to him tighter.
I know.
Risa exhales a little, a tricky task, navigated. You don't like archery, or keeping pets, or hunting, she adds, dropping her boots to the ground and starting to wiggle her feet back in without bothering to reapply socks. You like politics and expensive things and winning, so there's that. And you like Ed. Roy sighs, holding out his arm for her jacket so she can finish tying her shoelaces.
I meant it, you know. Ed's not some enrichment toy to be dropped into my rat cage.
Risa straightens back up, and the look on her face is one he's learned to recognize and fear from all the times he naively agreed to help her with some farm chore that she knew, and he had yet to discover, would scar him for life. Do you really think it's Ed going to be the chew toy?
Ideally, no one is the chew toy.
Roy says, defensiveness automatically triggered by Risa's, I'm about to watch you milk something, face. I wouldn't worry too much either way is all, she advises, as the cab pulls into view at the top of the street. Who knows? Maybe Ed will end up as excited about you touching his tits as I was.